Today's episode is with my friend Dave Homiak, who I met at Camp Mustache 2 years ago. Dave recently walked away from his corporate career and is now financially independent and early retired. Dave is a super side hustler like me. He has flipped cars, he has Airbnb properties, he's done college hacking for his kids, and in this episode, he's going to share a super special hack that you guys will definitely want to keep listening for. It's a mortgage interest credit where Dave gets money back on his mortgage interest that he pays every single year. I had never heard of that, and it blew my mind, so listen up for that, and I can't wait to share this one with you guys. This is another live episode recorded in our Facebook group. Let's go.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your host, Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey everyone, welcome to a live podcast episode, a live show of the Fire Drill Podcast. I am here with Dave. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. I feel welcome.
Good. I'm glad. So everyone who is listening live right now, feel free to leave any comments for us in the Facebook group. And if you are listening at home, we're doing this live podcast in the Fire Drill Podcast Facebook group. You can get a link for that on firedrillpodcast.com. All right. So Dave, we met at Camp Mustache 2 years ago, and I remember hiking up Mount Si and then on the way down, just learning about everything that you have going on in this space and being totally blown away. So I'm super pumped to get you on the podcast today to chat about it. But before we get into all of that, let's kick it off by having you introduce yourself to everyone.
Okay. And I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation on the walk back down the mountain as well. I am retired from straight jobs. I have a bunch of different side hustles. And one of the major things that helped make that possible was going to Camp Mustache and seeing that you don't always need to have a plan. You just need to keep moving forward. One of the biggest influences to me there, who maybe he knows this, maybe he doesn't, was Joe Olson. And I will say something that maybe, I'm not sure if it's public knowledge, but the one thing that he told me that was really interesting is since he fired, at least at that time, he had, due to different investments, he had more money saved than when he originally fired. And that gave me a lot of confidence that if you're in the side hustle, if that's your thing, if that's what you like to do, if that's what you enjoy with your time, then the whole 4% rule and kind of other scary things potentially really doesn't matter. So,
100%. Side hustling is not for everyone, but it's definitely for me. And I know that it's for you too. So before we get into that, tell us about you. Like, where do you live? Do you have kids? What's your whole vibe?
So I live in Ann Arbor. I have lived in this house for 20 years. I have three kids. Two are in college. One's a sophomore. One's a freshman. I have an eighth grader. And my wife lives here as well, which that made it a little scarier to quit my good job. It was a job I really enjoyed, but I wanted to try a bunch of other things. I guess the other thing that helped motivate me as well was I had a horrible boss. And if you really want to be motivated, if you have a horrible boss, congratulations, because that was very motivational for me.
Wonderful. I have had some interesting bosses, but no one that I would call horrible, like the movie Horrible Bosses, at least. But let's talk about when you decided to walk away. A lot of people are wondering when they should pull the trigger and finally do it. Did you have a certain number? Did you have passive income coming in? What made you comfortable to make that decision?
So what made me comfortable making that decision was a passive income stream. I had had a bad review from my boss in February, and then I showed up at Camp Mustache in May. And in February, when I had that review, which was interesting because nobody around me, including my team leads, agreed with it. So that made it even more interesting. I decided I was going to duplicate my income within 2 years with real estate. And I thought that was a reasonable goal. I looked into a bunch of different things. I looked into investing in people doing apartment syndication. I looked into doing apartment syndication myself. investing in apartment syndication, if you have a lot of money, you can invest enough to throw off enough income. If you syndicate an apartment, you can certainly do it. But that takes, in my mind, it was going to take at least a year, maybe 2 years for me to feel comfortable pitching anything to anybody else. And then I had partnered with some friends on some Airbnbs in Austin. And I started to look at the whole short-term rental space. And the rough rule of thumb is you can make about 2.5 times the income from short-term rentals as you can from long-term rentals. So I then started to research on Bigger Pockets and determined that the Smoky Mountains in Pigeon Forge in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, the cabins were still very low price for the amount of income they threw off. And the other things that made that really appealing is if you bought them as a second home, it was only 10% down. And if you bought them as an investment property, it was only 15% down. So I actually bought one shortly after Camp Mustache. And then I actually bought another one that August. Then I actually bought another one that November. And I didn't know exactly what the numbers were going to be. But at that point, I knew I was not going to be replacing my income with those three. But I figured if I bought five for sure, I would have it replaced. And my plan then was, okay, I'm pulling up my timeline. I didn't need the 2 years that I thought. I'll just wait until July 1st because that will make me feel good and just comfortable. I don't know why, but it did. And then I work for a very big company. And if you had 10 or more years of service, you could voluntarily separate with a nice package. And I did not have that. And then they said they didn't get enough people to take that offer. So it was right around Christmas time last year. They said, oh, by the way, we're going to have involuntary separations. So I went in and I asked, am I allowed to volunteer for the involuntary separation? And which gave me a little chuckle as well. And basically sent a letter to ER, sent an email to ER, asked that. And they said, that will be taken into consideration. And we will let you know when we let everybody else know, which was a little kind of weird just because I would have liked to say goodbye to some people, more people than I did. I said goodbye to a couple people somewhat clandestinely because I don't want to be the guy that really wants to leave the company. And then they keep me. So I told maybe 5 or 6 people. And so last February, I got let go, bought out, however you want to phrase it. And then ended up getting paid basically through July 1st. And then one of the things that worked out way better, and if you are older, like I am, I'm in my 50s. If you're older and you can take a separation, voluntary or involuntary, the one thing that worked out really well is I ended up getting COBRA for 18 months, which is less expensive than Affordable Care Act stuff. So it's like half off maybe roughly. And it's all the same, dental, vision, medical. And I was concerned about that. The cabins were throwing off enough money. I wasn't concerned about covering that, but it was just a nice, unexpected surprise.
Did you make it to 5 cabins?
I did not make it to 5 cabins. And part of that was I have a couple other things that I do. I ended up becoming a real estate agent and started to help some friends buy and sell some homes. And the other thing that happened is the cabins, the other thing I didn't realize, I like to think I think of a lot of these things, but the other major thing I missed along with healthcare was if you have an investment property that's throwing off, we'll just call it obscene cash flow, as in when you put down the down payment, within 2 years, you'd get all your money back with the way it was cash flowing. So it's like 50% cash on cash. The other thing that follows crazy cash flow is appreciation. So I ended up actually just last month, I sold a cabin that I'd owned for my wife and I had owned for 15 months for $71,000 more than we paid for it. And I used that as a down payment on a 7-bedroom. So along with doing the cabins, certain cabins do better than others. So there are certain things I now look for, and I'm trading out the lower performers and going to higher performers and less headaches. So I don't think I'm going to need 5 cabins. But bottom line is I didn't get them, but I'm comfortable with the income that was coming in. The other thing that happened was I think it's late 90s, I looked into becoming a pilot, just a private pilot. And I looked at the time commitment and the study and the cost. And we was recently married and knew we were going to have kids. And I said, I'm not going to do that. And I always said, if I ever have the time and the resources to do it, I'm going to do it. So I ended up actually getting my private pilot last summer and working on my instrument rating now. And the goal will be to become an instructor. And then the goal will be to actually fly for Delta Connect regional jets within a year or two, because I think it'd be cool and it'll be fun.
Wow. Okay. I'm super excited for you, and I'm trying to play cool right now, but I think you're living the epitome of what those of us that are pursuing this want. It's that you're getting to achieve your lifelong dreams. You're doing cool stuff that's bringing in an income stream better than you anticipated, actually. And you're learning a lot of new skills along the way. Let's dive in a little bit to making the decision on Tennessee. I romanticize the Smoky Mountains and I like the idea of owning property there, but that's probably a poor reason to buy a rental property. Did that come into play, or did you just hear that Tennessee was where it's at for return and you would have invested anywhere if it had a good return?
I'm solely about the money. The cabin that I sold is, if I had to have a cabin, it would have been the one that I would have wanted to live in, but it was all about the bottom line. So I'm very... The goal of this thing is to generate money. The goal of this thing isn't to give me pleasure or to like, the views were amazing at that cabin. But bottom line is, the more people you can sleep, the more you can charge. So that cabin slept 8. I have one that slept 14. And then I had one that slept 16. 14 and 16 were kicking the butt out of the poor little sleeps 8 cabin. Yeah. And then the one I just got was the 7-bedroom, and that sleeps, I think, 17 in its current configuration. And that's going to go up by a couple people.
Why is that? Is like the Smoky Mountains a family reunion destination, or who are these people that are vacationing there?
I think there's definitely a lot of families, a lot of extended family. There's a lot of groups that go down, teacher groups, church groups. There's a lot of partiers. There was a guy, I don't even know. I won't speculate what he was. I don't think he did smoke cigars in the non-smoking cabin. He did bring a dog into the non-smoking, or the no pets allowed cabin, which was the same cabin. He did let the dog poop on the deck, and then he didn't clean it up, and then he left. So, you know, you have some headaches as well, but overall it runs fairly smoothly. Getting back to your question on the reason I picked Tennessee is I was doing research on bigger pockets. I came down to 3 places that I liked. Panama City Beach, Florida. Really glad I didn't pick that one. That one was the one that got wiped out by the hurricane. Scottsdale, Arizona, and then Smoky Mountains, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. One of the things that I find is that when people are, sometimes when they're making money, and certainly when it can benefit them to brag a little bit, they will. So there were some people posting, hey, I've helped people in Scottsdale, I've helped people in Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. So I contacted some different real estate agents, and I asked the one, how long have you been helping investors? And they said 2 years. And the one in Scottsdale, I said, how many people have you helped and gotten deals done with? They said 10. I asked the person that is my real estate agent in Smoky Mountains, said, how long have you been doing this? She said about 2 years. And I said, how many people have you helped? And she said, about 80. And I said, okay, I don't even have to do math. There's a lot of other people that are doing math, and they obviously are thinking this is a good choice. So in my mind, The other thing that I used is airdna.co, their data. That stuff is brutal. And they used to come out with a really nice chart, which they haven't come out with in about a year and a half. They came out with something about a year ago that is still better than nothing, but the charts they had were just amazing. So it'd have how the least expensive places that threw off the most money, and it would lay everything out. And like Mountain View, California, you're going to lose $50,000 a year. Pigeon Forge was actually, Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg were the number one and number two places when the last chart came out about a year and a half ago. And they were in number like 4 or 5, 2.5 years ago. So before I bought, they were well positioned. One of the reasons I really like the Smoky Mountains or Orlando is, in my opinion, you are taking such a gamble to do it in any other city because of regulation. The economy has to be based on tourism, like Orlando is, or like the Smoky Mountains is. If your economy is not based on tourism, you're taking way more risk than I would ever want to.
Okay, I love that. And airdna.co, I have dabbled in that too. So with like a free subscription, you can see a lot of stuff, but you have to pay to get the good stuff. And I have purchased my zip code, both now in Seattle that we own and as well in Colorado Springs when we used to have a house, just to kind of see our backup plan. Like if we want to travel or if like worst came to worst, we needed to rent out the house, how much would it make in a short-term rental? And if you pay for the zip code, which it's, I think it was like $30 for your zip code for like a month, it's pretty expensive. You get tons of information. So this chart that you're talking about, is that different than the zip code thing?
Yeah. So the so if you type in best houses to buy, AirDNA, the old charts will come up. The charts that I really like, there was actually three tabs. So one was a pure rental arbitrage. You can rent an apartment. So for example, you could rent an apartment in Ann Arbor for $1,650. If you lived in one of the bedrooms and you Airbnb'd out the second bedroom, you would pay $50 a month on average for 12 months. So they have stuff like that. I think Savannah, you are making like $7,000 or $8,000 a year. So this is just, you're running it, you're there. That's all kind of legit. You're keeping your thumb on the parties or whatever that's going to go on. They had a second chart that was strictly rental arbitrage. You're renting multiple apartments in cities. You're not living in one of the bedrooms. And then the third chart was actually the purchase of property, whether it was houses or condos. And that's where Las Vegas, Cleveland, maybe Columbus, Ohio, maybe Cincinnati. I forget. It's in the charts though. But if you do best house to buy and then AirDNA or best vacation rental to buy, best property to buy, I forget. Google some of that stuff. All the older charts will pop up. And like I said, it was 2.5 years ago, a year and a half ago. And they did come out with one about a year ago that's the 100 best cities. And that's still usable. It's just not in the chart form that I prefer.
Yeah. And you, what I like about it is that you can creep. If you end up after picking an area, buying the zip code, you can see all of the people that are renting and you can look by listing and see like, what is it about their listing? Is it the bedrooms? Is it the pictures? Right. You can kind of like guess and investigate. And if someone's doing really bad, you can figure out why. Is it just terrible reviews or terrible listing? What's going on there?
Right. And the other thing I will warn people about, the when they have the large amount of data, I think they do a good job. When you go into zip codes, so for example, I'm in Ann Arbor, University of Michigan football's here. There's certain people that only rent out their house for football weekends. So 7 weekends a year, it's on Airbnb. That is it. And they charge a crazy amount of money. They block out the rest of the schedule because they're like, I'm not leaving my house for 100, 200 a night. But what AirDNA does is it says, oh, look at this. The entire year is full and their average night is 700 a night. You can make 100,000 a year. So the way to kind of get around that, if you're actually using this to crunch your own data in your own area, is you need to click on these $1 million money makers and see how many reviews they have. So if they have 10 or 12 reviews and they're claiming it's sold out every night, it's a lie.
Yep.
You know, you get to 30, 40, 50, 60 reviews, you know, the thing's getting a lot of use.
That's really a good point. Okay. So you have the short-term rental game on lock and you mentioned that you did like the second home financing and then you did the investment financing. But I also know from your presentation at Camp Mustache that you are all up on the mortgage rates, and you introduced me to something called a mortgage credit, I believe, which blew my mind.
Mortgage rebate.
Are you 50% comfortable?
50% this year.
Are you comfortable sharing that with us on this podcast right now?
I am. So I got approval from so a lot of the guys, you know, it's like anything else. There's certain guys that know stuff, and then there's certain things that, you know, are, it's kind of best to, if you let them out, things will blow up. But this was all legit. So basically, if you're in the state of Michigan, you want to get a mortgage from these guys. It's only for your primary residence, and it's only for people that live in Michigan that are going to finance their primary residence in the state of Michigan. But the place is called Dow Chemical Employee Credit Union. It's dcecu.org. They have a credit union, by definition, is nonprofit, so they have to do something with their profits. They've decided to give back a rebate on any interest you've paid. So if you have a car loan, you're going to get back some money. If you have a credit card and you keep a balance, shame on you, but you'll get a little bit of money back from these guys. The brutal play is on mortgage interest, you can get money back. So I've gotten 75% back twice, got 70% once, I got 60% once, and I just got 50%.
Of your total mortgage for the year?
Of the total mortgage interest paid.
Wow.
So you pay $8,000, you got $6,000 back. And it's like, this is amazing. So there's stuff like that out there. I told maybe 4 or 5 people, maybe 6. But of those, like 4 people thought, this has to be a scam. There's no way that this stuff exists. And they just, no, not doing it. I'm shunning you. And I have 2 like best friends for forever that did it. So they're like, this is the most amazing. January 1st rolls around and it's like, yep, we've announced that we're doing another 50%. Now, they have announced that part of that rebate was because they thought bad times may continue and they've been paying out a lot. So they're already telling people, don't expect a lot back in the future. So, I mean, it did go down to 50% this year. It's
related to the market. Yeah.
Right. So my expectation will be it will continue to go down.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember after we talked about it, I tried to Google it and I thought of a million different ways I could say it to see if it was in my state, and it was not, from my understanding. But if anyone listening live right now, or anyone listening later to the podcast, knows of something like this, definitely send me an email if you want to share it in the Facebook group, or I'll email it out to everyone that's on the Fire Drill email list. There aren't many things like it, though. Have you ever heard of somewhere else having it?
I tried to Google, and because I'm like, this can't be the only place. And I found a couple other places, but they were running more like 5, 7, 10%. So there are a couple other ones out there. And when you get the rebatable mortgage, they charge you a higher interest rate. So I had a 2.99, and I could have got a 2.99 with these guys. But if I went with a 3.49, that was what you had to take if you wanted the rebatable. So I actually pay a 0.5% more interest, but when you're getting 70% back or 50% back, it's...
Mm-hmm. So it's good, but there's no guarantee that they, not that they would take it away, but they're not writing that every year you're going to get this. It's kind of a risk.
Exactly. Every year, I think in November or December, they see what their finances look like. And then they announce about halfway through December, by the way, January 1st or the first business day of the year, you're going to get a rebate of X%. So that's the way it's ran the past 4 or 5 years. But like I said, they already said it's not going to stay this incredible gravy train.
And this was just your primary residence. You couldn't get anything like this on the investment properties, right?
It was my prime. So my mortgage is with these guys. And I also got a home equity line of credit that I used actually to buy Volkswagens with when that was a thing.
Oh yeah, I forgot you used to flip cars as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah,
when okay. So you also flipped in specifically Volkswagen Beetles? Is that what you did or
Volkswagen Diesels?
Diesels. Okay.
So if it had Volkswagen got caught cheating on emissions, the federal government got involved, said you need to take 85% of these off the road. The only way you're going to be able to do this is to pay way more than trade-in price or market price. So there was a lot of people that did this. I just did it too. But basically they, Volkswagen to get these cars off the road had to pay, I don't know, maybe 5,000 to 10,000 more than what they were worth. So I was trying to buy as many as I could.
And then selling them to who?
Back to Volkswagen.
Back to the dealer. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
So you were, it was shocking that the dealers, you know, I'm buying them from, and they were in Audis as well. So I was buying from Audi and Volkswagen dealers. I had to hold the car for a couple months until the court finalized and said, okay, now they have to buy them back. And then I signed up for slots and sold them back the cars that they sold me.
this is funny, but it's also kind of like, whoa, America, what are you doing?
Well, this is like I can't even imagine working at a Volkswagen dealership or an Audi dealership and not bothering to read what's going on. Yeah. I Googled like Volkswagen diesel settlement and they had charts with very specific amounts of money on them. So you knew exactly what they had to give you. You didn't have to speculate. Is this a good deal? Is this a bad deal? So you just said, okay, I know they're going to give me this. And I would just try to call and say, that's exactly what I wanted. And can I buy it, sight unseen. So I was buying all over the country and having them ship back.
Okay. Let's talk about the social currency of the type of stuff that we're talking about today. Having this information and having access to people like you who are not only trying these cool things, but you're discovering them, or you may be learning from other people, it's hugely valuable. But like you said, a lot of people that are doing this stuff, they don't want to share it because they don't want to kill the deal. And I know that's very popular in the travel reward space. I've been to conferences where they're like, everyone, and practically like, shut your phones off. We're going to talk about something, but I don't want you to share it. Type stuff. Right. And then also having to find the people that are talking about this, because these are the type of things that, yes, people like to share and brag, but they're not going to bring it up if you run into them at your kid's soccer game in passing. Like, you have to go out and find the people talking about this. So for you, how did you find those people?
I've actually been active in the travel hacking community about 15 years. There's an event that I put on in Ann Arbor every summer where I'll have somebody come in that I think is pretty good at what they do or has some novel ideas. And so they'll come in the weekend that Ann Arbor Art Fair is and they'll speak. So I got exposed to a lot of the bloggers 10 or 15 years ago, and I became friends with some of them. One of the best bloggers right now actually lives in Ann Arbor, Frequent Miler. If you ever want the best credit card sign up bonus, he always has the best, where some of the guys will say, here's the one that I have the affiliate link to that I get paid for. And Greg will say, I found one that's better than what I get paid for. I want you to always have the best deal. So I always recommend him. But I'm friends with him. I'm friends with some other bloggers. And just over the years, people gain trust and people will call when something special happens or something special's going on. So it takes time and it takes you providing something of value to show up and say, hey, I want you to give me all the secrets, and I may or may not blow it up and you may or may not know me very well. That's just not going to happen. So you may have to go out and try to figure something out.
So the value you provided, because you weren't a blogger at the beginning, it was more you provided a conference that provided this community in person for a lot of these people. Is that kind of what you would say?
Yes. And some of the people I was hanging out with too were also figuring things out and hacking things. And I was doing the same. So somebody would find something valuable or relevant to me that let me know. So I still very, very distinctly remember a conversation with one of my friends. I called him. He's driving. I said, turn the car around. You need to get home now. And he's like, nope, I got this thing to go to. And I said, there's a first class mistake fare out of Traverse City, which is where he happened to live. I'm telling you, you know, and here's the deal. It's like $90 to the West Coast. And he's like, okay, you're right. I'm turning the car around. So it's like, you know, making sure that your friends are taken care of. And when you know something's of value to them, to call them or text them or whatever right away.
Okay. So Dave, we talked about Airbnb. We talked about the mortgage rebate. We talked about you're flipping the Volkswagen, or I wouldn't even call it flipping, like selling it back to the dealership, the Volkswagens. What else is part of your fire? Oh, pilot's license. What else is part of your fire narrative that we need to know?
I buy and sell some sports tickets. I don't know. I get to do what I want. Oh, I know. Oh my gosh. This is the most incredible thing. This, I am like a kid in a candy shop. So there's a friend of mine who wanted to fly a while ago, and his mom's like, he wants to learn to fly, but basically had graduated high school, didn't have much money. And I was like, oh, you can join this gliding club. And gliders cost significantly less, and they also have a lot of scholarships for young people. So he was able to basically learn to fly a glider, parlayed that into flying airplanes, and then got an instrument rating, got a commercial rating, got a flight instructor rating, and actually now flies regional jets for a major carrier. And one of the things, and so when I got interested in flying this last February, I wanted his opinion, and he's actually been instructing me. But one of the things I asked is, by the way, I know that one of the benefits that you get is you could give this thing called a companion pass to your wife, but you're not married. I think one of those would be really cool. And so he's like, yeah, no problem. I'll sign you up. He said, I gave it to a family member that hasn't been able to use it as much as I'd hoped. So basically you can have it when it comes up, and it is like the most amazing thing.
Wait, so you're BFFs with this pilot and he can bring people on flights. Does he have to be flying a plane, or how does that work?
No. So this is called non-revenue benefits. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, this is something that if I was remotely interested in traveling, I would absolutely be all over if I was in this community. So for example, any plane going anywhere, if there's empty seats, a person with non-rev benefits can fly by paying basically the taxes to go to a destination. So for example, if I fly out of Detroit to New York City, it would cost roughly $15. To fly to China would be like $75.
Does he have to pick you the whole year, or can he switch between friends?
Right. He asked, so he can pick one person, and at his seniority date, he can change it. So once you're picked for that whole year. But the really interesting thing, I think, for people in the community is Delta has what they call ready reserve or seasonal workers. So for the summer or for the holidays, they need extra people to work gates. They need extra people to work the desk. They need people to work baggage. And you get the benefits at that time being just a part-time worker. I believe it's in the couple hundred hours a year. And there's all sorts of airports where you can work. So if there's an airport close to you and non-rev travel benefits appeal to you, you can go. I know you can go to the Delta site. I'm not sure whether United and American have the part-time seasonal ready reserve like Delta does. But I know for sure Delta has a very part-time thing where you and your spouse could be traveling for not very much money. You have to be really flexible though. Like I was going to fly to Chicago in October and I was watching and I'm like, I'm not going to make it to Chicago because all the planes got full. So I ended up buying a ticket. And so sometimes I have to buy one anyway. But it's nice that if there's empty seats on the plane that you can go. And if you're flexible, I think it's an awesome thing.
How hard do you have to work for that benefit? Like, would you have to put in a certain amount of hours where it might, your time may be worth more than you save? How do you like figure that out?
Well, I get to use his, so it, I don't have to work.
That
any,
doesn't apply but, to you. Yeah.
Right, it doesn't apply to me. I mean, in my mind, if you're interested, you would just have to apply and see. I think if you're a gate agent or what they call above the wing, I think it's 600 hours a year. I think baggage handlers, they have a really hard time. And I think I heard it's 150 hours a year. So not very much in my mind to get to a place where if you have a straight job, you're going to have a hard time going to a bunch of places because I have flexibility with what I do and I can manage the cabins from any place. I can go to a lot more places just because I'm not tied to a certain city that I have to go to every day of the week.
Right. So the choice is you can be a groupie to someone who works for an airline, which we mentioned, got to exchange value. So think about what you bring to the table to that person and why they would pick you to be their free flyer or work one of these seasonal jobs. I like it. I think it's cool. Cool hack.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last thing I want to talk about with you, you obviously have two kids in college and you are into this type of saving money creatively thing. Do you have any advice for people with kids coming up about to enter college? Like, do you pay full weight for them? Are there any like hacks, scholarships, anything that you discovered for them?
So excellent question. The first thing that happened about 4 years ago is a friend of mine's daughter decided to go to University of Illinois. And University of Illinois is like, I don't know what, 50, 60, 70,000 if you're out of state. And I was like, that's unfortunate for you, but this is a learning experience for me. So at that point, I came up with a contract for my kids that all three have been given that basically say University of Michigan in state with room and board comes to, I don't know, 25, 27,000, something like that. If you ever go to a school that is more than this, you have to come up with 100% of the money past this amount. And you have to come up with, I think there's a sliding scale based on grades, but basically you have to come up with 15%. So it's like 4,500 a year, which I thought was something that has them committed. Both my wife and I had our college paid for fully by our parents, and both of us did not take advantage of that. We might have both partied a little bit way too much. So both of us are like, there's no way we're paying our kids full tuition and full room and board. The other thing that I think is an unbelievably brutal, in my opinion, hack that's, you know, it's out there, but it's, I don't think you hear enough about it, is going to community college. So the pop quiz question for all you podcast listeners and live stream listeners is, what is the number one institution that students transfer to University of Michigan from? And the answer is Washtenaw Community College. So that is the local community college that is more than Michigan State, Eastern, and all the other schools. And the other really neat hidden thing about, at least for Washtenaw County, is if you are one of the top five students from any high school in Washtenaw County and choose to go to Washtenaw Community College, your tuition and books are paid for both years. So my son ended up choosing to go there and there's no expense. He just shows up, takes studies, takes the test, learns, and there is a track is guaranteed all these classes will transfer to University of Michigan and I believe Michigan State. So I know for sure he's applying to Michigan State. I think he's applying to Michigan. He's a sophomore this year. My daughter ended up going to Michigan Nursing School, and we're doing the we're paying the majority, and she has to pay 15%.
Did they have a moment where they're like, "Dad, I want to go to Princeton. Like, how dare you do this to me?" Or I mean, Michigan is very prestigious, so I guess maybe it wasn't that hard to get them excited about going there. But did you have that kind of reaction at first?
No. Nobody really wanted to go to a more prestigious school. So my son was always like, I just want to go to Washtenaw Community College. I want to, you know, concentrate on just my studies, kind of live at home, save some money. And my daughter always wanted to go to Michigan. She either wanted, so she plays soccer competitively, and she either wanted to play soccer for in college and end up potentially with a scholarship at a smaller school, like a D3 school, or go to Michigan if she could. Her goal was always if she got accepted to Michigan, she's going there no matter what. But if she wasn't going there, then she always wanted to play soccer. And so she did have colleges that were interested, but then when she got into Michigan, she's like, we don't have to talk to any other soccer people, we're going to go. I'm going to go to Michigan. So she's quite happy with that.
Cool. I love that. And good to know about the community college process. I have a niece that's actually taking community college classes in high school, and I think it's going to reduce her college years. So I think it's great.
That's really smart too. Yeah.
Yeah. But not all high schools offer that, and not all colleges have that kind of track, but definitely good to expose them when they do. And we can take advantage of that. We'll see. I wonder when my daughter's 4.5 months old. It'll be interesting to see when she's college age, if what is the whole thing? Is it still like it is now, or is it an online thing?
Right.
I don't even know. Cool. All right. Well, Dave, we're going to end this by giving you an opportunity to talk about your podcast that you have. I know that it's if you're giving this much information on a guest podcast, I can only imagine what you share on yours. So let's talk about yours.
So the podcast I have, you might just have to listen to old episodes. So myself and one of the other people that participates in the podcast are still interested. The main person that's doing it got a new job, and he's very engrossed in that job. So we actually haven't done a podcast in about 3 months, and we keep talking about it, and then certain things get in the way typically. But it is the Travel is Free podcast. The guy that is in the podcast that has the new job, he is, if you haven't read some of the stuff on Travel is Free, that is the most brutal access for travel hacking, and true creative free thinker gets the ideas, does the deep dive, and comes up with stuff that's still amazing, still relevant, still the freshest stuff. He is the most consistent producer of new, creative, crazy, really value-added ideas. And I think he's not, I don't think he's, with his new job, I also don't think he's writing much for that, for the travelisfree.com blog as much either. But a lot of his old stuff, there's a Delta calculator. A lot of people think Delta miles are useless. You can pick what city you're in, and it will show you the cheapest award cities that you can go to for 5,000 miles from your city, which nobody thought even existed with Delta, because they seemed to always charge way too many miles to get any place. He has some really brutal United hacks.
Cool. Well, you'll have to get him to come on in guest appearances like once a quarter or something. You can drag him on to talk.
I'm hoping we can. Yeah. So his wife and myself are willing to do the podcast. We just need to get him to carve out some time. I hope he decides to come back and do it. A lot of people enjoyed it.
Cool. Well, Dave, thank you. This has been so helpful. I know everyone got a lot of value. Dave, I'll give him the link to the Facebook group so we can hang around. If you guys have any questions, leave a comment on the video. And this is going to go live this spring on the podcast. So if you guys are listening live, or if you're listening live or you're listening to the podcast, I really appreciate you. Thanks so much, Dave, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.